from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice defended the Bush administration record on counterterrorism before the 9/11 Commission today. In her terse, at times heated, three-hour testimony, Rice calmly maintained that the administration had done all it could before 9/11, given the limitations of intelligence gathering and the bureaucracy of the CIA and FBI. Rice said there was no silver bullet or clue that emerged in the months leading up to 9/11 that the White House could have acted on to prevent the terrorist attacks in New York and Washington. It took the catastrophe of 9/11, she said, to fully illuminate the challenge and to push the country to action. Tonight on Point, Dr. Rice's testimony, what she said, what she didn't say, and where it leaves the loaded debate over responsibility for 9/11. Joining me now is Josh Meyer. He covers intelligence for the Los Angeles Times and was at the Rice hearing earlier today. Good evening, and thanks for joining us, Josh Meyer.
You're welcome.
Josh, Washington digesting Dr. Rice's testimony tonight. It was months in coming. The White House resisted for a long time her doing it, and her doing it publicly and under oath. How's it going down tonight in the Capitol?
Well, I think there's some mixed responses to it. I think depending on who you ask, people will tell you that she either did a good job, that she did a bad job, that she was... suffered a few, body blows, but nothing mortal. I think there's a range of opinions on what happened. I just actually spoke to Dick Clark himself for a long time, and it was interesting to hear what he had to say about it.
Give us a sense for that. This is, of course, the former counterterrorism chief of the White House.
Right.
She was not directly critical of him. On the other hand, she kind of suggested today that this was Dick Clark's job to figure this out. It was, in a way, she suggested it was his fault.
Well, she seemed to deflect a lot of the criticism onto, onto Clark, her own advisor, and also onto the FBI and the CIA, and pretty much everybody else except the White House in terms of how to deal with this threat. She also said, I think at one point, that nobody had asked her to do anything about this, and therefore she didn't think she needed to do anything, that the FBI had said they were on top of it and so forth. And I think a few of the commissioners said, well, you're the national security advisor. Since when do you need to be asked to do something? For his part, Clark said that he thought it was, quote, pretty much a non-event, and that he didn't think there was much in the way of a factual difference between what he said and what Rice said.
Meaning that his criticisms stand, that she didn't answer his allegations, that this wasn't big on the agenda of the Bush administration and so on?
Well, I think he said that she was trying to say that she was denying his claims without specifically refuting his allegations. Everybody who was at the hearing, and it was very interesting being in the room, was trying to sort of parse what she was saying to see if she was specifically contradicting him. And I didn't really see all that many places where she was. I mean, there was a lot of talk about whether the plan that Clark presented at the beginning of the administration was really a plan or suggestions for action,
right,
because a plan was coming later, things like that. I mean, what Clark said was that it was mostly semantics.
Josh, take us into the hearing room today. There were several outbursts of applause, a couple outbursts of laughter. What was the atmosphere there?
Well, it was a lot more measured than it was 2 weeks ago, I think it was, or last week. It all runs together. When Clark himself testified, I mean, there were a lot of people in the audience at the time who really visibly teared up. Some people actually even sobbed when Clark said, you know, your government failed you, I failed you. I think he sort of, it was a very emotional hearing. There were people sort of yelling for government officials, including CIA Director Tenet, to tell the truth, quote unquote. I think today it was much more measured. I do think that that Rice, beforehand had sort of telegraphed to people that she wasn't going to apologize. I don't think that that really helped the administration's case, but I don't think it hurt it either. Afterwards, she did sort of walk back to where some of the families, the surviving families and the survivors and the families of the victims were, and talked to some of them. But there was no hugging and crying like there were when when Clark testified.
And give us a sense of the commission itself. There was a lot of talk about brother and sisterhood between commission members, nonpartisanship, and so on today, yet there seemed to be a fairly clear dividing line in the intensity of lines of questioning between Republicans and Democrats there. How's the commission's bipartisan tone holding up?
Well, I think that during the last hearing, there was a lot of much more intense and sharp partisan, criticism or questioning. It was almost like, sparring prosecutors. And I think that some of the Republicans in particular sort of felt the heat for that. There were two Republicans on the panel who 2 weeks ago were so critical of Dick Clark, that afterwards there was sort of a backlash against them. And I think that specifically because of Rice's stature, and I think that people just genuinely like her. I think that people, even the Democrats, were much more deferential to her than the Republicans were to of Clark.
President Bush called Condi Rice from his ranch in Texas today, from his phone in his pickup truck, we're told. Do you know what he had to say?
No, I actually hadn't heard that, but I'm sure that he told her she did a great job, and thanks for, I wouldn't say catching the spear, but I think that the more she testifies in public to this, the more heat is taken off the president in terms of testifying as to what he knew. What I thought was very interesting today was that Rice said that she couldn't remember. She said, quote, "I really don't remember, Commissioner, whether I discussed this with the president." And what she meant was whether there were Al-Qaeda sleeper cells in the United States in the months before the September 11th attacks, as Clark had warned her there were.
A pretty critical point. On the other hand, she was essentially downplaying all of that today and said the big picture was we couldn't know. We didn't know how, where, what, when.
Right. I think she was saying that, you know, they were involved in sort of the big picture strategy type things, and that it was up to others to sort of, deal with the actual strategic efforts to find the terrorists. She also did say that they were involved in the operational response and the threat reporting.
Just briefly, when do the president and Dick Cheney go before the commission, and when does it wrap up its work?
Well, next week's going to be very interesting. There's going to be two full days of marathon hearings in which the FBI directors, current and former, will be testifying. Bush and Cheney, I think, are going to be testifying in the next 2 weeks. Interestingly, former President Clinton, testified this afternoon for more than 3 hours.
That was in private session?
Yes, in private session. We don't know what he told the commission. So they're going to be wrapping up. They're supposed to have their report done, you know, in a few months, and it should be July 26th is the deadline. And we're all awaiting with great interest what they say.
So. Well, a fascinating day today and much more to come. Josh Meyer, thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Josh Meyer covers intelligence for the Los Angeles Times. He spoke with me from Washington. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice finally took the oath and the public questions of the 9/11 Commission today. Tonight, we'll hear excerpts from that testimony and plumb its candor, its accuracy, and its meaning for American security and, inevitably, American politics. What did you hear in Condoleezza Rice's testimony? Did your questions get asked today? Were you satisfied with the answers you heard? Is the country getting the truth about 9/11? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Peter Bergen, a fellow at the New America Foundation and the author of Holy War, Inc., Inside the Secret World of Osama bin Laden. Good evening and welcome, Peter Bergen.
Good evening.
Also with us tonight from Washington is Scott Armstrong, founder of the National Security Archive and director of the Information Trust, a D.C.-based group that promotes open government. Good evening and welcome, Scott Armstrong.
Good evening to you.
Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Peter.
Hi.
And hello, Mr. Armstrong.
I want to jump right into this. Peter Bergen, with you first. A long wait for this testimony, a lot of stonewalling and resistance to it ever being given in public and under oath. What did you learn today? How did this testimony fill in the picture or obfuscate the picture?
Well, I think in terms of looking at what was actually news here, the thing that leapt out at me is the more details on the August 6th memo, the fact that it was headlined Bin Laden determined to attack in the United States. But really, most importantly, that there were 70 full field investigations of our suspected Al-Qaeda cells that were mentioned apparently in this memo, which I think is a pretty astonishing number if it's really the case. And also the implication that the FBI was indicating that preparations for a hijacking were taking place. Now, it's not clear if that was in the United States, outside the United States, but since it's the FBI, more likely inside the United States. They do have overseas legates,
right.
But obviously their main thing isn't. So, this memo, which I think will be declassified, CNN is reporting today that it's going to be declassified at some point, is pretty interesting, and we know a lot more about this memo than we did before the hearing. So I think that's point one. Point two,
yes,
is that there was kind of a disconnect between what Rice said about sort of shaking the trees and telling the FBI, the 56 field officers of the FBI in the summer of 2001, to really mm-hmm. be on the lookout for stuff. And what the commission, some of the commissioners said, which is after 1,000 or so interviews, that there was no indication the FBI was shaking the trees in the summer of 2001, and apparently no indication that that was asked for. Josh Meyer just pointed out that, you know, next week's hearings are going to be the FBI, and I think that's obviously going to be a pretty contentious hearing, and obviously this disconnect will get more examination.
Scott Armstrong, I want to get your takeaway, top takeaway, but let's just begin first to hear some of the exchanges today. And this one first with the Commissioner Richard Benveniste, a Democratic appointment to the commission, goes right to the point that I'm sure you'll speak to as well, of the August 6th, 2001 presidential daily briefing memo from the CIA to President Bush. A pretty tough exchange here between Condi Rice and Benveniste.
Dick Clark had told me, I think in a memorandum, I remember it as being only a line or two, that there were al-Qaeda cells in the United States. Now, the question is, what did we need to do about that? And I also understood that that was what the FBI was doing, that the FBI was pursuing these al-Qaeda cells. I believe in the August 6th memorandum, it says that there were 70 full field investigations underway of these cells. And so there was no recommendation that we do something about this. The FBI was pursuing it. I really don't remember, Commissioner, whether I discussed this with the President.
Thank you.
I remember very well that the President was aware that there were issues inside the United States. I talked to people about this, but I don't remember the al-Qaeda cells as being something that we were told we needed to do something about.
Isn't it a fact, Dr. Rice, that the August 6 PB warned against possible attacks in this country? And I ask you whether you recall the title of that PDB.
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States. Now, the
Thank
PDB,
you.
No, Mr. Benveniste,
I will get into
I would like to finish my point here.
I didn't know there
given
was
that
a point.
You asked me whether or not it warned of attacks.
And I asked you what the title was.
You said, did it not warn of attacks? It did not warn of attacks inside the United States. It was historical information based on old reporting. There was no new threat information, and it did not, in fact, warn of any coming attacks inside the United States.
Condoleezza Rice and Commissioner Richard Benveniste in a tough exchange today over this August 6th presidential briefing that the CIA gave to President Bush. Scott Armstrong, this was at the center of so much conversation today. The title for the first time came out, Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States. The fact that this was on the president's desk or in the Oval Office a little more than a month before the September 11th attacks, raising eyebrows all around the room today, and this public for the first time, Condoleezza Rice insisting that this was not a warning, this was an historical document and should not be seen as a missed warning. How did you read that?
Well, I absorbed her point. I think the only way we can reconcile the issue is to get a copy of the document. If it's going to be declassified, we'll learn fairly soon what it is. But I think that shows how far the commission is away from getting to some of the basic facts here. This is a document that should have been available to them right at the beginning. They should be looking at what went into the preparation of the document, what the real evidence was behind it, whether it was properly analyzed. And they're really just barely getting the ability to talk openly about what the title is, much less anything else. I thought that, Peter pretty well summarized the new information today. It was very thin. What we did learn, however, is how little the commission is able to focus on what seem to be the important issues. There was a real palpable ineptness in their approach to it. It always happens with commissions that they, like congressional committees, believe that everybody has to ask questions and that this kind of mind-numbing repetitiveness will somehow lead to thoroughness. Mm. The only time these things work well, and there haven't been many of them that have, the Watergate hearings, the Nixon impeachment inquiry, Iran-Contra, is when one or two counsel, and they're usually not members, but counsel, take on a witness over a period of time, and they start by setting a context and basically putting into that context the information that they need to know. The commission has not done that, and we're squabbling back and forth about isolated meetings and isolated memoranda, and I don't think anybody learned anything.
And only today, as we're reaching the end of the trail, nearly, getting some of this material on the record, getting it before the commissioners. Josh Meyer, Peter Bergen, Scott Armstrong, Jack Beatty, please stand by. We'll take a short break here. We're talking tonight about Condoleezza Rice's testimony. What did you hear in her testimony today? We're at 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Condoleezza Rice before the 9/11 Commission, what the nation has learned today and what it has not. I'm joined from Washington by Peter Bergen, a fellow at the New America Foundation and author of Holy War, Inc., Inside the Secret World of Osama bin Laden, and Scott Armstrong, founder of the National Security Archive. Also, our own Jack Beatty. You can join the conversation tonight. Without the shock of 9/11, could, should, more have been done pre-9/11? Did your questions get asked today? Were you satisfied with the answers you heard from the National Security Advisor? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're going to hear a lot more of those questions and answers from Condoleezza Rice today. But, Jack Beatty, I want to step back first and get your big take on what you heard today, what you didn't hear, your takeaway, Jack.
Well, what I was struck with was the sort of the mindset of Dr. Rice. She reminded me of the kind of person we all meet in organizations who basically, if they had a motto, it would be, we can't do anything until we do everything. Again and again, she would say, well, we couldn't do anything to strike at Al-Qaeda until we had dealt with the Afghanistan problem, and we couldn't deal with Afghanistan until we dealt with Pakistan. So therefore, we accepted an act of war against us, the attack on the coal, without a response because it needed this, quote, strategic fix first. So we can't do anything until we have all that straightened away. And then she had a similar attitude, it seemed to me, about the domestic issues. She kept talking about the structural problem between the FBI and the CIA. They didn't talk. We all knew that. They have to work out that structural problem. But she wasn't herself active in working it out. And then she kept putting things in boxes, you know. Well, that wasn't a warning report. That just contained a warning. That wasn't a threat report. It just contained, these bureaucratic categories, as if she were just trying to put everything in its box and control everything that way. And rather than acting like a leader who says, I don't care about these boxes, tell me what's going on, I really think that the way she was setting things up, she was not serving the president very well.
Nothing would be done until everything was known or a whole new strategy was hammered out is the Jack Beatty takeaway tonight. Let's hear an exchange between Democrat Commissioner Jamie Gorelick and Condoleezza Rice here. Gorelick points out the huge pre-9/11 intelligence failures and asks Dr. Rice if top-level officials should have been more involved in dealing with the terrorist threat.
Secretary Mineta, the Secretary of Transportation, had no idea of the threat. The administrator of the FAA, responsible for security on our airlines, had no idea. Yes, the Attorney General was briefed, but there is no evidence of any activity by him about this. You indicate in your statement that the FBI tasked its field offices to find out what was going on out there. We have no record of that. The Washington Field Office, international terrorism people say they never heard about the threat. They never heard about the warnings. They were not asked to come to the table and shake those trees. SACs, special agents in charge around the country, Miami in particular, no knowledge of this. And so I really come back to you. Let me add one other thing. Have you actually looked at the NLETs, the messages that the FBI put out?
Yes.
To me, and you're free to comment on them, they are feckless. They don't tell anybody anything. They don't bring anyone to battle stations. And I personally believe, having heard Colleen Rowley's testimony about her frustrations in the Massawi incident, that if someone had really gone out to the agents who are working these issues on the ground and said, we are at battle stations, we need to know what's happening out there, come to us, she would have broken through barriers to have that happen, because she was knocking on doors and they weren't opening. So I ask you this question as a student of government myself, because I don't believe it's functionally equivalent to have people 3, 4, 5 levels down in an agency working an issue, even if they're the specialists. And you get a greater degree of intensity when it comes from the top. And I would like to give you the opportunity to comment on this because it bothers me.
Of course. First of all, it was coming from the top because the president was meeting with his director of central intelligence. And one of the changes that this president made was to meet face-to-face with his director of central intelligence almost every day. I can assure you, knowing government, that was well understood at the Central Intelligence Agency, that now their director
and the DCI had direct access to the president. Yes, the president read the director of the FBI. I'll have to see when and how many times, but of course he did, and with the attorney general and with others. But in a threat period, and I don't think it's a proper characterization of the CSG to say that it was four or five levels down. These were people who had been together in numerous crises before, and it was their responsibility to develop plans for how to respond to a threat.
Okay, a lot to unravel here in the exchange between Jamie Gorelick and Condoleezza Rice. Peter Bergen, so many elements here. I guess the first one is Jamie Gorelick saying, if you were so aware of this threat, you're saying now, and you were making all this noise to your government, why were so many people apparently uninformed, not alerted to the threat? How do you reconcile that yourself, Peter Bergen?
I just don't know the answer to that. I mean, I think that's going to be one of the things we'll find out next week, is perhaps what communications were made with the FBI in the summer of 2001. But clearly, the commission couldn't find those communications, and so it's hard to comment on something that didn't happen. It appears not to have happened.
And Scott Armstrong, same to you. The assertion today that there were 70 full-field investigations going on of al-Qaeda cells, and yet repeatedly we heard, and we will hear again tonight, commission members saying we couldn't find any evidence of FBI activity around these cells. How do you square that?
I'm not sure they said there was no evidence of any activity, but they certainly didn't find 70 full-field investigations, and I think we'll hear some redefinition next week about what that means.
Well, we'll hear from Mr. Romer tonight saying they didn't find field investigations.
Right. No, I think they haven't. I think the White House will try and reconstruct something to try and fill in that gap. The main issue I think here today was that there were several times where she opened things up. She actually would give an answer that had a little bit of a pregnant side to it, and there was no follow up. So there was no sense of pursuit. What you just heard was the closest thing. I think Jamie Gorelick seemed to be the only person who was actually listening to her. The rest of them seemed ready with their next question. But there were times when she made a reference at one point to the fact that their concept of who al-Qaeda was had changed. They were moving to a different concept, and they wanted to hold at risk who those people, what they really cared about, and not just try and go after bin Laden or just punish the group around bin Laden. Well, there's some context to that. There's a lot of background indicating that there were a Salafist clerical cells, if you will, in Saudi Arabia and Yemen that really are much more at the heart of this. And that kind of an opening deserved a question about, well, what have you learned? What did you learn from these wiretaps? If you had these full field investigations and you talked to these people and your views changed, what did you learn? The question about the coal was whether or not Sandy Berger said there was gathering evidence that bin Laden and al-Qaeda were responsible for the coal. Well, at some point, they must have gotten to the point where they had enough evidence, because on November 3rd, 2002, they sent a Predator in with a missile on it and assassinated a bunch of people in Yemen for their responsibility for it. But we still, and that was based on intercepts, we still don't know what they learned, what it is that they really know about this group. They don't seem to have gotten to the fundamentals, and they don't seem to be able to pursue it. They don't seem to have a view or concept themselves of what this is about.
No great expectations there of the commission coming out with a perfectly clear picture. Let's get to a really perhaps the most fiery exchange today between former Senator Bob Kerry of Nebraska and Condoleezza Rice. Here, Bob Kerry challenging President Bush's pre-9/11 assertion, as conveyed by Condoleezza Rice, that he was tired of swatting flies when it came to going after terrorists. Jack Beattie, to your point, he wanted to do more, that the president wanted a big strategic solution to terrorism as a whole.
You said the president was tired of swatting flies. Can you tell me one example where the president swatted a fly when it came to al-Qaeda prior to 9/11?
I think what the president was speaking to was...
What fly had he swatted?
Well, the disruptions abroad was what he was really focusing on. CIA would go after Abu Zubaydah, go after this guy. And
Dr. Rice, we only swatted a fly once on the 20th of August, 1998. We didn't swat any flies afterwards. How the hell could he be tired?
We swatted at... I think he felt that what the agency was doing was going after individual terrorists here and there, and that's what he meant by swatting flies. It was simply a figure of speech.
Well, I think it's an unfortunate figure of speech, because I think especially after the attack on the coal of the 12th of August, October 2000. It would not have been a swatting of fly. It would not have been. We did not wait to get a strategic plan. Dick Clark had in his memo on the 25th of January overt military operations. As a part, he turned that memo around in 24 hours, Dr. Clark. There were a lot of plans in place in the Clinton administration, military plans in the Clinton administration. In fact, just since we're in the mood to declassify stuff, there was he included in his January 25th memo two appendixes. Appendix A, strategy for the elimination of the jihadist threat of al-Qaeda. Appendix B, political military plan for al-Qaeda. Why didn't we respond to the coal?
Well, we...
Why didn't we swat that fly?
I believe that there's a question of whether or not you respond in a tactical sense or whether you respond in a strategic sense, whether or not you decide that you're going to respond to every attack with minimal use of military force and go after every – and on a kind of tit-for-tat basis. By the way, in that memo, Dick Clark talks about not doing this tit-for-tat, doing this on a time of our choosing. I'm aware, Mr. Kerry, of a speech that you gave at that time that said that perhaps the best thing that we could do to respond to the coal and to the memories was to do something about the threat of Saddam Hussein. That's a strategic view. And we took a strategic view.
Condoleezza Rice getting her main applause of the day with an exchange with Bob Kerry there. Jack Beattie, this goes right to your point. Bob Kerry saying, implying, surely there were things that could have been done. President Bush didn't want to swat flies, but he wasn't doing much of anything that Bob Kerry could see, even responding to the sinking of the USS Cole. Condoleezza Rice again insisting it wasn't appropriate to do this tit-for-tat stuff. We had a big plan in mind.
Yes, and again, you know, even when they got their final big plan out in September 4th, that was going to unfold over 3 years. They thought they had a lot of time. And it's the it's the disconnect that Clark brought up between their thinking they had all this time and the warnings that were setting Director Tenet's hair afire. You know, how could you have all this time to unfold this strategic plan while you're getting these threat assessments, if they, you know, whatever they were, saying there are cells in the country. They mean to attack us. We know about the medium, even the possible use of airplanes. And we have even been dealt with this at Genoa, where we had to figure that that could be a threat to the president at the meeting in Genoa. There was no connection between this spacious view of all the time they had to figure out their grand strategy and the urgency of what Clark says he was telling her all the time. This is serious. We have to do something now.
Peter Bergen, speak to these two big axes. First, Condoleezza Rice making much today of their determination to go after al-Qaeda in a strategic, not a tactical way. Does that come across as legitimate, as accurate, and corollary to that? Richard Clark says there was not urgency about al-Qaeda and the terror threat. Condoleezza Rice says, oh, yes, there was. What did you learn today? What light has been thrown on both either of these?
Well, you know, I mean, I guess there is an argument that just sending cruise missiles over didn't make a lot of sense. But, I mean, as Jack has pointed out, if you just wait for everything, for all the planets to align perfectly, it's sort of a recipe for not doing anything. And, you know, what I did, Scott Armstrong and I were asked by the New York Times to look, you know, suggest some questions for Condoleezza Rice last Sunday. And I just did a very simple thing. We should do a nexus search for al-Qaeda or bin Laden and Condoleezza Rice and any statements that she made about al-Qaeda or bin Laden before 9/11, she basically never mentioned it publicly. So there's a big disconnect between, you know, if the whole
assertion
thing was,
today that they were all over it.
Yeah, and in fact, you can do the same thing with Paul Wolfowitz, with Dick Cheney. You know, all these people just really never mentioned bin Laden or al-Qaeda as a threat before 9/11. They woke up that morning, 3,000 Americans died, and suddenly they've been working on it feverishly, from the moment they were inaugurated. So I think that's a big disconnect.
And, Scott, what about the issue of tactical versus strategic? Does it sound credible? Does it sound real? And the point made a couple of times today that what they ultimately came out with on September 4th was, we're told, rather similar to what Richard Clark was proposing in January of 2001.
Well, and it cuts both ways. I don't look at Clark as somebody who's on the other side of a different administration. I look at him as part of the Rice team, and I think the problems and the questions that still need to be asked of her are the ones that should be asked of him. They're not yet answered. We've been arguing about, and most of today was arguing about metaphors, about what it meant to have somebody's hair on fire or what it was that was swatting flies. We don't need metaphors. This is serious business. We need to know what the underlying facts were. When she opened up the question of regional policy, that's a serious strategic concern. She said you can't go after al-Qaeda if you can't handle Afghanistan, and you can't handle Afghanistan if you can't handle Pakistan.
Yeah.
And then she could have also said you can't handle Pakistan unless you can figure out how to keep Pakistan and India from exchanging nuclear weapons. If you remember John Walker Lind, he was being trained by al-Qaeda not to be to go into Afghanistan or do this or that on 9/11 type mm-hmm. stuff. He was going to go into Kashmir to do something provocative there. And the point being that there are questions about the regional strategy that are absolutely quite critical. If they did something that was strategic, then there should be some palpable thing to show for it. If you don't examine it, you're not going to find it. Richard Clark welded together for the first time the notion that the anti-terrorism policy and Iraq are deeply connected, because when you went into Iraq, you withdrew from Afghanistan, which is now unstable again. You deprived them of the resources that you need elsewhere in the world to go after the terrorists. You created – there's no evidence that there was terrorism going on in Iraq. You've created not only another sanctuary for terrorists, but you're also now creating a breeding ground for it. What was odd was Kerry raised this rhetorically and said, I'm not going to ask a question about it. She gave him four or five opportunities to say, what was your regional policy? How did it evolve? How did you get there? But nobody set a context for it. It was all done through these metaphors. The hair on fire was at a time when Tenet was in charge of the Palestinian-Israeli peace process.
Right.
He just came back from Israel. He had all kinds of information about terrorist acts in Saudi Arabia. Sharon was beating him up over the notion that you can't handle bin Laden, so let us handle Arafat the way we want. It was when his hair was on fire was about things that had nothing to do with activity in the United States. But nobody ever set the context for that and the way the commission framed the questions. So I'm not even sure if they understand that. It's shocking. It's as if they just haven't looked at the record.
Peter Bergen, very simple question. How do you assess Condoleezza Rice today just in terms of forthrightness and openness? Given what you know, how open, how forthright was the National Security Advisor?
Well, I think that she was not asked a lot of questions, as Scott has pointed out. I mean, and for instance, one of her responses was, why is it that Iraq was being considered as a sort of leading candidate for the 9/11 attacks, being behind it? And she said, well, you know, we were sort of at war with them, and Center Attack, one of the, you know, there was the attempt against President Bush Sr. in Kuwait in 93. But, you know, no one followed up and said, well, did you discuss Syria, Libya, these other countries that were also involved in anti-American terrorism in the same cabinet meetings post 9/11, which, of course, they didn't.
Well,
they only discussed Iraq because they had a sort of idée fixe about Iraq. And if you look at Bob Woodard's book, which, after all, was based on the NSC minutes.
Yep.
You know, Wolfowitz is talking about a 50% chance that Iraq was involved the day after 9/11. And on September 16th, President Bush says, you know, I know Iraq was involved, but we'll do Afghanistan first.
We'll come back and look at more of that. Peter Bergen, Scott Armstrong, Jack Beatty. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for this program.
Tonight about Condoleezza Rice before the 9/11 Commission, what the nation has learned today and what it has not. We're joined by Peter Bergen, Scott Armstrong, and Jack Beatty. You can join us as well. Did your questions get asked today? Were you satisfied with the answers you heard? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Former Secretary of the Navy, John Layman, laid out a whole series of questions asking Condoleezza Rice if she was aware of this, aware of that. Interesting to interpret exactly where he was going with this, but let's listen to the litany first. John Layman and Condoleezza Rice.
During the short or long transition, were you told before the summer that there were functioning al-Qaeda cells in the United States?
In the memorandum that Dick Clark sent me on January 25th, he mentions sleeper cells. There is no mention or recommendation of anything that needs to be done about them. And the FBI was pursuing them, and usually when things come to me, it's because I'm supposed to do something about it. And there was no indication that the FBI was not adequately pursuing the sleeper cells.
Were you told that there were numerous young Arab males in flight training had taken flight training, were in flight training?
I was not, and I'm not sure that that was known at the center.
Were you told that the U.S. Marshall Program had been changed to drop any U.S. Marshals on domestic flights?
I was not told that.
Were you told that the red team in FAA, the red teams for 10 years, had reported their hard data that the U.S. airport security system never got higher than 20% effective and was usually down around 10% for 10 straight years?
To the best of my recollection, I was not told that.
Were you aware that INS had been lobbying for years to get the airlines to drop the transit without visa loophole that enabled terrorists and illegals to simply buy a ticket through the transit without visa waiver and pay the airlines extra money and come in?
I learned about that after September 11th.
Former Secretary of the Navy, Republican John Lehman, with Condoleezza Rice today. Scott Armstrong, help us interpret this. A couple of big things. First of all, her comments about she's usually things aren't brought to her unless she's supposed to do something about them. But first, this kind of horrifying litany of gaping, what appear to be gaping holes in security in the United States before 9/11. John Lehman had begun his questioning talking about the effectiveness or lack of effectiveness of the transition from the Clinton administration to Bush. What was he getting at with this litany here? Was he saying, Ms. Dr. Rice, you should have been aware of these things, or they weren't adequately communicated to you by Sandy Berger and the Clinton team? How did you interpret this?
Oh, I think he was shifting responsibility for who was to move the deck chairs and the Titanic around. What he said was that while there was a short transition because of the late election, they also left in place most of the senior people in the different intelligence components and the different people involved with this. So, in fact, there was continuity. And if there was continuity, then the things that were underway, that were changing, that were supposedly getting better at the end of 2002, just prior to the election, should have continued on. And did that percolate up to you? You can't really expect a national security advisor to take responsibility for every malfunction, misfunction, and non-functioning part of the U.S. government. It's an enormously cumbersome, difficult thing. The intelligence community's not any better, in fact, because of too much secrecy and because of the stovepiping and whatnot, things don't get to the right people.
So you're saying these questions were supposed to absolve her?
No. Yes. I think what he was saying was the people below you weren't bringing these things up, so you had no way of knowing that these issues were there. What he was saying was now, in retrospect, after 9/11, with all this stuff on your plate, it looks like you were totally ineffective. You didn't do anything. You sat on it all. But wasn't it really the responsibility of Clark to draw things up to his level? That was what was implicit in this for me. I think he was setting up the answers for use in the final report. And they were rhetorical questions. Again, rhetoric. He was not getting to facts because he wasn't going and illustrating any of these points about how something should have been handled by someone and wasn't, and what she should have done about it. There was nothing specific enough to give you a sense of whether we should have more confidence now than we had then.
Peter Bergen, what about the elsewhere in her testimony today, Condoleezza Rice saying, look, nobody said that I needed to do anything. Usually when things come to me, I'm supposed to do something. And so if I wasn't specifically asked to do something, and later kind of suggesting with a warning of how, what, when, and where an attack was going to happen, that she wasn't required to do anything, does that wash with you when you put it up against this, what they call the threat spike of the summer, the sky-high warnings of an impending terror attack?
Well, going back to what Jack said, you know, I mean, it's a sort of like everything had to be perfectly aligned to get a response. And in fact, there's a very interesting the Pentagon, by the way, when asked to produce military plans by either the Clintons or the Bush administration, tended to say, hey, we need the 101st Airborne and what's known as showstoppers. They basically said, you need so much to get this done that basically it's sort of undoable because it would have been sort of untenable to do it in that way. So, I mean, there's plenty of blame to go around. I think there was one thing that was, you know, obviously absent from this, the M word, the we made mistakes or we're sorry.
Yeah.
And that was obviously a decision that was made for sort of political reasons that we were not going to admit kind of culpability in this. It would have been a very human thing, I think, and certainly something the families were looking for to acknowledge that mistakes were made and Obviously, they were. And if you do the thought experiment where, you know, the U.S. government was a sort of private company like Enron or Tyco, you know, all these people would be out of the jobs, but they're not. In other cultures, people that would have resigned or been forced out, but it didn't happen.
Not here. Jeopardy, this comment from Condoleezza Rice spoke directly to your point about nothing to be done until there's something to be done that I'm asked to do. Jack, are you there?
Oh, I'm here. Yes, I'm sorry. I thought we were going to quote her. Yes, I mean, again and again, there's that sort of, I was doing my job. I'm not supposed to be proactive here and shaking. And, of course, one of the first questions Ben Venise tried to ask her was, well, look what the Clinton administration did when the National Security Advisor shook the tree before the Los Angeles incident in 1999. They shook the tree. Something happened. They found somebody at the border. Maybe if they hadn't done that, that wouldn't have happened.
Of course, she said, no, that was just one great customs
officer. That was just lucky, yeah. But then Richard Clark said, you know, even if they had just done a wanted dead or alive on the TV, you know, of people who were in the country, whom they thought were in the country, that could have done it. But, you know, she did say something here that she made several statements that are contradicted by fact. She said, we move quickly to arm predator unarmed surveillance vehicles for actions against al-Qaeda. But according to the AP, the military tested an armed predator throughout the first half of 2001, but the White House, quote, failed to resolve a debate over whether the CIA or Pentagon should operate it. Now, the White House, that means she didn't. She did not resolve that debate between these two agencies. Her job is to resolve that debate. We didn't have the predator in the air to strike at these people because she didn't resolve that debate.
Let's try and squeeze at least one call in here. We've got a lot more tech we want to hear, but Bill's calling from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Thank you. I would like to address the mindset of the Bush staff when they took over the White House. By their own admission, and especially their track record after they took over, the Bush team, it seems to me, they set out to either overturn or ignore any legislation, any presidential directive, or any program associated with Bill Clinton. The entire Bush response to the Clinton staff seems to be, yeah, well, thanks, but we're going to do this our way. This is a fact that seems to be accepted by both the left and the right. The left bemoans it. The right has actually touted it.
Right.
This is what they're going to do.
And you're afraid the baby of counterterrorism got thrown out with the bathwater of all things,
yeah,
Clinton.
Yeah, right. It was just an overall response by the Bush staff to anything associated with the previous administration.
Bill, let us pick that up, and thanks for we get into this interesting relationship between President Bush and Condi Rice. Was she not bringing this stuff up to him, as you said? Maybe he was let down, or was he communicating this kind of message that Bill's pointing to? Look, if it's the way the Clintons did it, I don't want to hear about it.
Well, that's consistent, isn't it, with other things we know about them? I mean, the Korean business, for example. Secretary Powell, I think, on the second day of the administration, or the first week, was slapped down for saying we're going to continue the Clinton policy of negotiation. No, we're not, the president said, even with the South Korean president beside him in the White House, much to the shock of that gentleman. We know what his position was on the Middle East. He said, listen, Clinton got into this, and he was deep into it. I am, quote, going to park it. That's what he said. I'm going to park the issue because Clinton was dealing with it. So we know that anything that Clinton did, they wanted no part of. So it's quite consistent with other things we've seen on the record.
Let's hear where former Congressman from Indiana, Democrat Tim Romer, questions Condoleezza Rice on what responsibility she bears for the pre-9/11 Italian intelligence failures.
You say that the FBI was tasked with trying to find out what the domestic threat was. We have done thousands of interviews here at the 9/11 Commission. We've gone through literally millions of pieces of paper. To date, we have found nobody at the FBI who knows anything about a tasking of field offices. We have talked to the director at the time of the FBI during this threat period, Mr. Picard. He says he did not tell the field offices to do this. And we have talked to the special agents in charge. They don't have any recollection of receiving a notice of threat. Nothing went down the chain to the FBI field offices on spiking of information, a knowledge of al-Qaeda in the country, and still the FBI doesn't do anything. Isn't that some of the responsibility of the National Security Advisor?
The responsibility for the FBI to do what it was asked was the FBI's responsibility.
Now,
you don't
I
think there's any responsibility
believe,
back to
I believe that the responsibility, the crisis management here was done by the CSG. They tasked these things. If there was any reason to believe that I needed to do something or that Andy Card needed to do something, I would have been expected to be asked to do it. We were not asked to do it. In fact, as I've mentioned to you.
Don't you ask somebody to do it? You're not asking somebody to do it. Why wouldn't you initiate that?
Mr. Romer, I was responding to the threat spike and to where the information was. The information was about what might happen in the Persian Gulf, what might happen in Israel, what might happen in North Africa. We responded to that, and we responded vigorously.
Tim Romer with Condoleezza Rice. Okay, a couple of things here. First of all, this comes back again, Peter Bergen. Tim Romer saying that in all their thousands of interviews and millions of pages of documents, they have no evidence that any – he says nothing went down the chain to FBI field offices. This doesn't seem to square with the idea of 70 full-field investigations going on of al-Qaeda in the United States. That seems critical to whether or not the U.S. government was responding to warnings. Is there any way to square this, or is the public just left looking at these two statements with, jaw slack?
Well, I mean, two things. First of all, I think this memo is going to be declassified, mentioning the 70 fields, so that may make it a little clearer. Secondly, we're going to have FBI hearings on Tuesday and Wednesday, and this is obviously going to be a subject of – but, I mean, if there really was 70 field investigations going on by the FBI, I mean, that kind of cuts either way.
Yes, it does.
I mean,
where's the fruit of that?
Well, I mean, in the sense that, if I was briefed in the summer of 2001 that there were 70 active field investigations inside the United States of suspected al-Qaeda people, I would be pretty freaked out given the threat environment. I would be like, well, let's find out more. That would be a subject. So if indeed these things were happening, I don't think that redounds to the benefit of the administration. Mm.
And Scott Armstrong, here she comes again saying this was this crisis management was to be done by the CSG, that's Richard Clark's group, this hierarchy issue. They were supposed to be taking care of it, therefore it's not my issue, not my fault. Does that wash?
No, I think this is one area where she really fell through the ice today, but people didn't seem to, again, they didn't seem to follow up or notice it. Somebody, one of the Republican appointees, threw her a softball at one point and said, well, you even wrote during the transition or during the campaign, you wrote an article and said you understood that the FBI and the CIA didn't get along and the intelligence community needed to be fixed.
Yeah.
And she took some credit for that. Well, that's the point. If you came in, if she knew that, and if the briefings she got, when she arrived there, she would have known that the FBI under Louis Freeh was a disaster. It was totally incapable of dealing with these things. I mean, I don't know whether the reason they can't find 70 field investigations is because the FBI couldn't find them if they were there anyway, or whether they just didn't happen. But the point is, the FBI desperately needed to be fixed. Now, the question also, I mean, and that is at her level. That is something she knew. Why she wasn't going to Clark and saying, look, you've got to build a congressional consensus for some strong change. Nobody's ever liked to fool around with the FBI since the days of J. Edgar Hoover. And Freeh was there until June, then there was an acting director, and they had their own person that they wanted to put in after that. But these were very important issues. She had full responsibility for that. That is clearly at the heart of what went wrong.
Well, Dr. Rice, on the record, and a lot to chew on for a long, long time here. Peter Bergen and Scott Armstrong in Washington, thanks to you both for being with us tonight. Great having you.
Thank you.
And Jack Beatty, last word goes to you. There it is. The bone is out in the street now for everybody to chew on. How do you think it's going to go down politically?
Well, I don't know, but I think we're going to have a lot of leaks from the various people she said didn't tell her things. I suspect that bureaucrats are going to be protecting themselves by sending memos. And
saying,
yes, we did. Yes.
Jack, thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for this program comes from Sophos Antivirus, protecting corporate IT networks.